officially, this is where I welcome you to She Speaks for yet another awesome Tuesday. It's great to be back. I was off for last week, so thank you to Ronnie. And, of course, big up to Deborah. Deborah was our guest for last week, so we want to say thank you very much. Also to our partner, the Bank of St. Lucia, and the entire team RCI for holding it down and making sure that we had an awesome and listen, the show went on. So today we're back, and I've got, like I said, we've got the beautiful and awesome and talented and ever so progressive Jewel Shalmine. She is going to be the one that we are speaking with today. So let's take a word from our partners, and then we'll come back. I'm trying to go live on the Facebook feed. I do have to apologize because we didn't get the proper interface, so we had to revert back to just the banner. I'm not too happy about that. But those of you who would have seen, and if you don't know, then you should just check our feed. You will see the flyer of the awesome young lady that we're having the conversation with this morning. So you can put a face to the voice and the conversation. So a word from the Bank of St. Lucia, and we come in right back.
We are the Bank of St. Lucia, for every solution, building our future today. We are the Bank of St. Lucia, for every solution, with you every step of the way. Always there for you, serving you and me, the St. Lucian way. We like family. Always there for you, helping you and me. BOSL no say for me. We are the Bank of St. Lucia, for every solution.
Bank of St. Lucia, all the bank you need.
Okay, and we are back. For those of you who are just finding the time to log on to us here on Radio Caribbean International, welcome to She Speaks for yet another amazing Tuesday. My name is Maureen. I'm your host, Maureen Alexander. And, of course, She Speaks is made possible by the Bank of St. Lucia. So our guest today, like I said, is Jewel Shalmine. Let's go in. Let's dive right into this conversation. It's been a minute. We've been trying to pin down this woman right here. Finally, we got her. So it's an honor. Jewel, good morning. And thank you so much for joining us on She Speaks today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. You know how long we're trying to have you, girl. Well, of course you know, but you're a busy woman with a lot on your plate, which we're going to be delving into this morning. So understandable. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Jewel. I'm speaking to you, but I'm also trying to go live on my Facebook as well. So just tell us a little bit about yourself. Where were you born? What was growing up like? What were you like as a child? What was your school days like? You know, what sort of household? Just give us a little in depth as to, you know, where this lady is coming from.
Okay. Well, I am from Grace View Fort. I would say as a child, I have very fond childhood memories. Growing up in the 80s, we had no running water. The river was alive with women and little girls watching, lots of farming, crayfish hunting, the boys trying their wickedest somersaults and backflips into the river. There were swimming and diving competitions, canoeing, kayaking with our handmade floats, sliding down the hills on taikoko and cardboard. There were lots of outdoor activities, too, like Chinese kids, jumping jacks, ring games, making clay pots when it rained, and at night, the storytelling of death, burial, the lajables, majinweti, bolong. These are the things that I experienced. As a child, I had lots of pets. I always had a lot of books. I loved reading, and my father always brought those home so that I can, you know, just indulge myself into a different world.
Right.
These were some very awesome experiences as a child growing up. But I would say the experiences as a teenager in the mid-90s and even early adulthood in the 2000s were very different and not so pleasant, because I saw my community transform. It got a bit very noisy in my neighborhood. It was combative, the kind of bellicose type, orderly, territorial, my community. Mm-hmm. And as a teenager, I would say that it was fairly easy to fall prey to the social ill that plagued the community at that time, mainly violence, gang rivalry, and drugs.
Uh-huh.
It was really the norm to assimilate or preserve such generational expectations. And I mean that you're expected to be like everyone else. But for me, I wanted an escape. I felt that education was my ticket out of a life of struggle and resigning myself to menial jobs. So I was determined to change the status quo, to be honest, at least for me, for my mom, and to be an example to others in the community that they too can be much more than, so that we do not have to succumb to a generational curse of hardships and abandoned dreams, like my mother often told me. Like, she, at age 16, she had left her mother's house and she had two children by 20, and, you know, life was really tough for her. So I didn't want to relive those experiences. So I was very determined from secondary school to work hard, to get a decent enough job, not just to make ends meet, but to live comfortably. But I've not been very harsh with my community, to be honest. I'm just illustrating how life was and the circumstances that would defeat young people, and knowing where you came from, what you had to wrestle against, and the expectations persons would have of you coming from a certain neighborhood. And you just being triumphant at the end, it just gives credence to the statement that, you know, succeed against all odds. But I really love my community, Grace. I am super proud of where I am from and very grateful for my upbringing. I would not trade it for any other experience. Right. In fact, my boldness, my fearless and defensive attitude, my drive, my speed, and I would say non-acceptance of anyone taking advantage of me is a direct manufacture of the socialization patterns that I received growing up as a child, especially during my teenage years. So big up to Grace, Vinford.
That's amazing stuff. Wow. Quite interesting and quite a lot there in your upbringing. And you were making some very strategic, very powerful decisions from a young age as to your future, I must say.
Yes.
And you would attribute this to your mom.
Yes, to my mother. She always said that, I do not want you to be like me. I want you to do well in school, to make it out there. And my mother had a business. She had a shop, and she was always in the shop. And I knew myself growing up and always helping my mother in the shop on Fridays, sometimes 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. We're up, we're barbecuing, we're roasting things and selling. And that was my life for years. And I saw how my mother worked, and she always told me, do not follow my footsteps. Do not go into that kind of business. Be different. Be somebody different. Help yourself. Get out. And she always said that to me, and I did not want to disappoint her at all. So I did my in school.
Well, that is amazing stuff. You know what? We've heard a lot, so we really want to find out how all of this transition to where you are right now. So allow me to take a word from our sponsor, from our partner, the Bank of St. Lucia, and let's come back and talk about your career path and where you are right now and the journey taking you to where you at, and some of the things you might hope to move on to in the future.
Sure.
We'll be back.
We are the Bank of St. Lucia, for every solution, building our future today. We are the Bank of St. Lucia, for every solution, with you every step of the way. Always there for you, serving you and me, the St. Lucian way. We like family, always there for you, helping you and me, B-O-S-L-U-C-E for me. For every solution,
Bank of St. Lucia, all the bank you need.
Okay, so for those of you who are just joining us, this is She Speaks on Radio Caribbean International, brought to you by the Bank of St. Lucia, and we are having an awesome conversation this morning with a daughter of the soil of St. Lucia, Jewel Shalmine. Okay, so Jewel, that was childhood, and you went to your schooling, and you had your mindset on not repeating a cycle that you grew up watching your mom had to go through, and I guess you would have by then understood that the challenges that went with it, and you made a conscious decision that this was not, you were going to break that cycle. So tell us about what field were you looking at that time when you were thinking about getting into a field of engagement? Were you always looking at education?
Not at all. My interest was in banking and finance. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. This is where I wanted to be. And I always saw myself working in a stock market as a finance director.
Wow, that was some big things going on in your head then, man.
Big dreams, never came too fast, but I'm still happy for where I am today, yes.
So how did the transition going now? So this is what you were thinking. That didn't pan out the way you wanted. So walk us through how you ended up in the education sector.
Like you would know, with St. Lucia, the employment prospects is not so bad.
Right, yes. It's limited.
So coming out of A-level, that was at Beaufort Comprehensive, the A-level department, I had done very well, and I thought that it would have been easy for me to get a job. And I had sent so many applications, but only to be turned down. And I was really looking at the banking sector. But it never happened for me. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, teaching was one of the first jobs that I had gotten. Mm-hmm. So I went into teaching. That was at the Miku Secondary School. That's where my career started as a teacher, thanks to Miss Remis Anthony, who gave me the opportunity to be a teacher at the Miku Secondary School. Mm-hmm. I loved it the first 2 years that I taught. The students were, oh my God, they were unbelievably nice. And there was such great satisfaction, such joy, feeling of accomplishment to see that those students succeeded because they were learning from you. Right. And I tried so hard with them. Yes, wow. I got to like it, but to be honest, I did not want to remain in teaching, but my mother advised me that I should get teacher trained so that I can become a permanent teacher, and that can actually help me to secure a loan for me to go to university, because I always wanted to go to university. I would cry hysterically just because I could not go to university.
I
really wanted to go, but she could not afford my parents.
Right, financially it was a big challenge.
Yes, and then to have assets to secure a loan for me.
Exactly.
So I just knew that I had to work in order to take myself to university.
Wow.
I decided to go to teacher's college, and then I came back to Newport Secondary.
And that was around what age were you at this time when you were having all of going through all of this?
I started teaching at age 18.
Right.
I started teaching at age 18.
Right.
At age 21, I went to teacher's college.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I returned at age 23. Now, when I came back from teacher's college, I had this brilliant idea that if I get life insurance, and I buy a piece of land, then I can use that as collateral to get us to get a loan, and then go to UWE to study economics. Economics and finance. So
you still were head on wanting to go into the field that you set out to in the first place, ain't it?
Yes, and I think the secondary as actually teaching business and accounting. So the passion was still there because I was doing what I liked. So yes, this was my desire, and my husband, he was my boyfriend at that time. He had gotten the opportunity to work out of St. Lucia, and I somehow convinced him that we should buy a piece of land. Although we were not married, we should buy a piece of land.
You smart one. You see why you put that ring on it?
I was interested in buying a piece of land to get a loan.
Right. No, the man is stupid, you know. The man see what a movement, and you say a progressive woman back then, might put a ring on that quick. He's smart fella.
Yeah.
That's good stuff, man. That is good stuff. Okay, and then so then...
It was a matter of patience, because what I did, I know that I would need a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I would save. I saved a lot for 2 years, and what he was sending to me for 2 years. And when I had enough, I got a piece of land. So by age 23, I had a piece of land already in my name, in his name as well. And that's what I would have used to secure a loan then to go to UWE. But it so happened when I was ready to go to UWE that I got the opportunity to teach in the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Ooh.
And I was not sure what to do. But I spoke with my mother, who is my mentor, my advisor.
Right.
And she said, follow your heart, trust what God wants you to do. I prayed about it a lot, and it was like, in that direction, you should go. So I went to the Turks and Caicos Islands to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say that this was the bloom of my professional development. Turks and Caicos, the work ethics and professionalism, it is way up there. It is top-notch, unsurpassed.
Mm-hmm.
I had wonderful experiences there. It is there that I discovered myself, my talents, my passion.
Mm-hmm.
So it just diverted from being interested in banking, finance, economics, to English and literature.
Oh, that was just about to ask, what did you end up teaching?
Yes, because when I got to Texas, I was actually interviewed to teach business and accounts in Texas. When I got there, I was told that I would be teaching English and literature. I was very disappointed because I never liked English, and I did not even do literature.
Right.
I hated it so much. But because there is that pressure on academics and getting students to perform in Turks and Caicos, it forced me to think a lot, to do a lot, to network, to go to other schools, to find out what the other teachers are doing. I read a lot. In fact, I had to teach myself literature in order to teach the students well, in order for them to, for CXE. And trust me, the pass rates, it would just please my heart every year to see that I would get 100% pass for those subjects.
Wow.
So that's where the passion got ignited for English and literature, and I decided to pursue that program at the University of the West Indies.
Wow. And at what point now did you come back? Because it seems like Turks and Caicos had you going. When did you decide to come back home?
I spent 8 years away from St. Lucia. So I spent 7 years in the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And in the year 2014, I got the opportunity to study at the University of Oxford. And it was then that I made the decision that I should leave Turks and Caicos and then migrate to England. And so that is what we I went to England to study at Oxford.
Did you have any kids at that time? Are you children?
I had no kids, but I was married.
Well, you had a husband. So
I got married at age 25, but I left him.
Right. And your husband wasn't traveling with you on this trip, so you guys had to be away during those times.
Yes. My husband was in St. Lucia, and I was in so long,
Oh, gosh.
But I visited him every Christmas, every December, not so long, though.
Right. But it was a conscious decision that the both of you had to make the commitment that this has to be done.
Well, the thing about him, he understands me very well.
Okay.
Marriage, I would say, did not imprison me or stop me from dreaming, from fulfilling my dreams.
Right.
And he knew very well, so he supported me all the way. He always said, you're all about school, you love school, it's all about academics for you and education, so just go ahead. So I wouldn't say that he was my emotional and financial stabilizer.
This is amazing.
So I ventured far and wide, and then when I was ready, I came back. So I came back to St. Lucia at age 32. Yeah, going on to 33, just before I turned 33, I came back to St. Lucia. So I was 25, and I came back at age 33.
Wow. And what happened then? When you came back, what prompted you to come back? Because you were in England, you were studying. Was it after you completed your study? Was it a job offer? You just decided it was coming back home. Because remember, you left Turks. You said you go to England, and then you consciously decided, well, it's time to reunite my marriage and do things of that sort and come back home. Was a job waiting for you when you get back here?
No, there was no job waiting for me.
Okay, so what happened?
It was a gamble that I was taking. To be honest, I was actually working in England already.
Wow.
I was a tutor at the ES International Language Center in Oxford, where we teach persons from all over the world who come there on high-intensive English courses to gain admission at a university in England. So you had persons from Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Austria, Germany, China, Taiwan, Japan, all over. So I met those adolescents. They were like students from 14 to 18 when they got to the university. Mm. And I had the great opportunity of teaching those persons of other first languages, teach them English as a second language.
Wow.
So I was it was a great experience. I was actually teaching in England first at the time. But and my studies was coming to an end. I was actually teaching on my third semester, which is the Trinity term, it is, while I was going to school doing my research. Yes, it was that flexible in the third semester to do that, because the third semester is devoted only to research, because Oxford is very big on research, so they give you an entire semester just to do research.
Well, that's good.
But I was able to get a job, and I was juggling the two very well until I completed Oxford.
Right.
But I understood that my husband really needed me. I had been away for so long, and he had been supporting me. And it was time for me to honor my marriage. So I came back to St. Lucia, taking a gamble.
Must have been, what kind of, because listen, we have a few more minutes left, because this time doesn't go far. But I want to go into the dynamics, because I find one of the things too, we have a lot of broken or single people going ahead because they figure it's not viable to be able to maintain a proper relationship or marriage whilst they pursue their career. But you did it, and I want to show that it can be done. So, but at the time, that must have been because, listen, this is working in England. This is pounds to dollars, to EC dollars.
Yes.
Yeah. So that would have been like a really tough decision to have to make. You had a job, a secure job in a place like the United States, in the education system, something that you loved. And you had to make up a decision either to come back home because Huzzy was here, or, you know, stay over there and work and make some pounds. So
yeah.
How was that a battle in your mindset?
It was, because I actually had my eyes set on Oxford University Press. I really wanted to work at the University Press because I had done very well in my research. I had gotten the award for best research in linguistics
for
that year. And I was just fascinated with Oxford University Press and the kind of work that they do and writing those textbooks and the research that it entailed in order to, you know, get the correct content for the textbook. So I wanted to work in that department, in the English language department. Mm-hmm. And yes, but I don't know. I think it was God. It was just God directing me that you should go back home, you should give this a try. So I came back to St. Lucia, to be honest, not thinking that I would have gotten a job immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I could have still had some... You know, I just felt that going to Oxford, I was very marketable because you can apply to anywhere around the world and you would gain some recognition, acceptance, and I could apply to Dubai, China, you know, just explore. Because a lot of the persons who were in my program, they did that, and there are persons in Dubai, Hong Kong, all over the world. So I figured that it can work for me, you know, because I did super well at Oxford. I got a distinction at Oxford.
Wow.
So I decided that if it doesn't work out for me in St. Lucia, then I'm just off again. That's what I was thinking.
Right.
But God showed me that I came back to St. Lucia, and I did not have to wait on a job. Mm-hmm. It's like I spent 1 month in the house, and the next month I was back at Miku Secondary, although I'd left this 8 years ago. I was back at Miku Secondary teaching in about 3 months. I was at Sufre Comprehensive as the vice principal in another 3 months. I was the principal of Sufre Comprehensive. And just for the rest of my life, like being at Sufre Comprehensive from 2016 until 2020, it was just 4 years of explosive success for me at Sufre. And I just believe that this was the hands of God.
Of God. Because it's, with that kind of, you know, the experience that you would have gained on different fronts, Turks and Caicos was, like you said, the work ethic and stuff like that is unsurpassed. Then you got the opportunity to go on over Oxford. You got you know, England levels again in terms of, these are all things that you were now able to bring back and enhance the whole education system here.
Yes.
So how is that working now for you? Some of the things that you, I mean, in terms of how, looking in at the education system in St. Lucia now, where it stands, or maybe at the time you come back up till now, what are some of the strategic things that you think that you could or may have influenced to date that you know, sort of stepped up how we do things and how we operate within the sector?
Yes. So when I came back, to be honest, the experiences that I gave in Turks and Caicos, I borrowed a lot of that in order to implement things and re-strategize and change some things that super comprehensive, because I knew that these were tried. They haven't tested, they tried, they're working, so it can work for us. I know the teachers were not used to it, but I knew because I was in the system for 7 years, and not only Turks and Caicos, but, you know, experiencing out there and networking a lot, thinking a lot, researching a lot, getting ideas, and I just wanted to experiment with those ideas to see how far we can stretch the school to heights, you know, great heights, heights of stardom.
Mm-hmm.
So this was my ambition, and kudos to the teachers for supporting me, supporting that vision. I owe them the credit as well, and the students. And for me coming to the super comprehensive secondary school, when I did my research, I realized that the school was, you know, borderline performance in terms of the 60s for CXC that they used to grade us and rate us in St. Lucia. So, and I was just very determined that, you know what, we need to aim for the 80s. And I recall very well that somebody said, this has never happened in the history of the school. That is not happening. It's not going to happen. And I was so determined. I'm very open. I was determined that we are going to get there. And it's a matter of strategy. So you saw that the rebranding and refining and repackaging of super comprehensive, the teachers helped a lot in that. And then, you know, the installation of lots of programs. We had the accelerated program. We had a skills training program to diversify the curriculum and to, you know, present more career options for the students, because I find that is very lacking in St. Lucia. We so much focus on the academics and on CXC and know that there are other talents and abilities, and students have other intelligences that they just want to develop to their fullest potential. So why not tap into that?
Mm-hmm.
So we offered a range of subjects like auto mechanics, plumbing, masonry, cake making, pastry making, garment construction. It is a lot that we added to the curriculum at Super Comprehensive. It was not easy because we did it on our own, to be honest. Wow. And how we started is very interesting because when we installed that skills program, it was very ticklish to get two timetables running at the same time, normal secondary school program and a skills training program. But the vice principal is excellent at that, so she was able to make it work. But the other thing is getting the tutors, getting the facility, the equipment that we needed to run the program so that it could be effective. Right. And that was a challenge. That was a headache. But I will tell you, I walked so many times to NSDC in BZ. I went care. I went to all these places right. to learn the program very well. I made so many trips to TVET department to see how they can assist and wow. how they can sell the CVQ to us to get training for the teachers for the CVQ. Yeah. And the other problem, too, we did not have tutors for masonry and auto mechanics and those subjects. So what I did, with the help of the teachers, I went to the community. I got retired persons who are qualified in those areas.
Wow.
And I had them, I begged them to come to teach the students free during their time at their timetable. And wow. these people did that for us.
Wow.
Thank God for them. They did that for us for an entire year, free of charge, coming to teach the students, following a timetable and not getting paid. Yes.
Wow.
So that happened.
This is amazing. Now, you have to have some awesome skill sets on the line there to be able to get people to come and put their work out there for nothing, you know. So that's some skills that you actually have. Well, I say, Joel, for Prime Minister in the future. I am dead serious. You get things done. I mean, this is the kind of things that we need. We get people like that to get things done. So right now, currently, Joel, are you still a teacher? Or what it is that you're engaged in now?
I am the acting education officer for District 8. I was uprooted, I will use the word uprooted, in September of 2020. I was not ready for that, to be honest, because it's just 4 years that I have been at the Super Comprehensive School. I was a principal from age 34, and just 4 years, I was not ready to leave the school, and then I got this call that you promoted, appointed to act as education officer of District 8. It was really hard for me, a hard pill to swallow, because I was not ready to let go of the school, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah, so here I am as an acting education officer, but since I did it for a term and now in the second term, I have learned to let go because I'm still in charge of the school. I'm still going there. I'm still helping.
Of course. I mean, come on.
I want the school to continue doing well, and I know that the teachers will give it their utmost and they will not let that school slide one bit. They will want to maintain that plan.
So as the district, officer of District 8, what are some of the things that what's the mandate? What are some of the things that, is it now at a higher level where you can influence the operations of more schools, more bodies?
Yes, definitely.
So do you plan or have you already started to implement some of the things that you've done to the Sufre school, to the rest of the schools that you're now in charge of?
I started because, remember, schools were closed in March, and then September came, and schools were reopening. So, you know, we pedaled into the new academic year, motivation spiking and confidence all up high.
Right.
And then there was this abrupt closure on October 16th. And then we have been having this abrupt closure. So it's like all the plans that you have, these things are set on pause. They are halted because of COVID. So I try to do my best with the limitations that present themselves, see how best I can lend some support to the remote learning.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, in terms of actually doing a lot of the things that I intend to do, though I'm in acting position, I have not been able to do much. I have started my networking. I'm looking at the Sufre Special Education Center in terms of, you know, just twinning us with special education centers in England. And we have had the dialogues. We're hoping to get some training from some of the best persons in the world at university, with the University of Cambridge and with University of Glasgow. It is there.
Wow.
We have had the exchanges already, Zoom, the teachers, everybody else. And there were so many great plans for that exchange over. They're coming over and teaching us and just giving us a lot of assessment materials and instruction on how best to teach those students of different abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, COVID has really dampened everything.
Right.
I'm not going into the special ed, but all the other ideas.
The entire system, system, education, because we speak in education now, has been offsetted. And I have kids at home, and we are struggling. So I want to, before we wrap up, Joel, as a person who is critical within the system, because I think we right now we're at a point where we could deal with every little bit of advice that we can get, because clearly we have not found the blueprint yet as to how to handle this. And I'm not asking Christ this morning. I am speaking from the experience of what I've been seeing happening with how my children have been having to go through back and forth. And so where are we at right now? Because the fact remains, COVID is here. Nobody planned for this, but it is here. And it has created what it has created. And the fact remains, physical school has to be stalled. So where are we at right now? And what are some of the thought patterns that are going into the, if that becomes the new norm, like we keep hearing that phrase, the new normal, are we ready? Are we heading? Are we getting in? Are we getting there? Are we on our way? Can we get some hope where this is concerned?
Well, to be honest, with the lack of devices and internet connectivity, I'm saying that a lot of students
are being left behind.
They are marginalized a lot. And if we really want that to work, there must be some kind of movement, some kind of stair where we get every child with a device, internet connectivity, in order for that thing to work very well. Because right now we're seeing it magnified the pockets of inequalities and even the socioeconomic divide is magnified right now. But to be honest, our new normal, it has caused a lot of turbulence, a lot of migraines for us, and you have a lot of teachers who are demented.
They are distressed as well, isn't it? They are distressed as well.
Yes.
So it's not that just students, but we have also to check for our educators, our teachers, who are having stressful moments dealing with this as well.
Yes, and not only dealing with this, but the teachers, you begin to question, are the students even learning anything online, and must we reteach when they go back to the school? How well can we as teachers bring out the concepts to the students in virtual space? Because remember, the teachers are not used to that. They're learning at the same time the students are learning. You understand? So COVID, it has really exposed the inadequacies of our education system and sounded the alarm for leaders, for educators to come together to pack a new plan for sustainable education. So it will demand a lot of financial resources from us in order for us to get there. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that I can say is that with the many unsavoriness of 2020, which for me that magnified in 2021, that can easily derail us, we cannot let our light be extinguished. The situation demands gritty determination from us. And when I say us, I mean educators, the parents.
Joel, I'm going to put you on the spot. I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but I'm one person. I don't like to mix things because, you see, I find a lot of the times we just mix up things too much. And right now, with the kind of knowledge that you have, that kind of passion that you have, do you think that you are well-placed within that system of education that we have here? Because I'm starting to believe that we have a lot of misplaced faculties within the system. I'm thinking with a person of your level of experience, with that drive, with that passion, I think you should be higher placed within the system. That's what I'm thinking. No, I am saying it because somebody needs to say it, and let the Grenadian take the pressure for saying it. Because you see, we are beginning to play with our children's future, and I think until we reach in moments like these, when we are faced with this sort of adversities, we are realizing, and we cannot allow this thing to continue on our children at our disadvantage.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I mean, you might not want to say it because of all the politics set up in your place, but I say it. So I said it. Okay, I think this young lady with this kind of passion, this kind of drive, and she gets things done. I think she should be better placed. Come on, guys, let's do something here. Jewel, we got to wrap up. It was such an honor, and I believe we could, you know, if we continue this conversation, I believe there's going to be a lot more that we could delve into, but we have to wrap up, unfortunately. So in wrapping up, if there's anything, I mean, challenges, I mean, like you said, you were with a lot of challenges in the start of your career trying to get this thing going. You had to make a lot of very strategic and decide, make some decisions from very early, the strategic decisions to help you to get on that path. So there might be people right now who are limiting themselves mentally because they believe, oh, financially I can't do it, and this, and you know, we find all sorts of excuses in our head while we are not progressing, why we are not getting it to the next level. So tell me, and tell some of our people, especially in this charge environment, because it's charge and a lot of people might be inclined to give up, give them a little hope for me, please.
Well, I can speak to a lot of women, because being a woman,
of course,
I will encourage women to not get trapped in societal expectations of women traditional roles, because you see it all the time. Mm-hmm. We have come a long way thanks to the feminists who have positioned women parallel to men in many areas. Right. And there are so many intelligent females that I know and those I do not know of, only secondary school or even Sir Lewis Community College, and that is it for them, because there is no progression. It may be because of financial deprivation, like you said, and no one to help them move on or to move up. But I would encourage them like I did it for myself. There was a delay in me going to university, but I did not lose sight of my dream. I persevered against all odds. So do not give up on your Rome was not built in a day. Mm-hmm. And there is someone who said that so many of our dreams at first seem impossible, then they seem improbable, and then when we summon the will, mm-hmm. they soon become inevitable. So the question is, how desperate are you for it? There is nothing that you can't have or achieve in life if you are willing to work hard for it. So I would encourage you to get up, be bold, chase that dream. It might take you a while, but with God, there is always an appointed time for things. And when you put in first, you trust in His timing. Timing is very important. And you keep the faith in Him, miracles will happen in your life. Wow. So just believe in that and don't lose sight of your dream at all.
What a powerful conversation this morning. Jewel, you are a jewel. The end. Thank you so very much. You are an amazing, and I really do hope that, you know what, we could utilize you some more within that system, because I think the system needs you in a bigger way, definitely. So thank you again so much, and all the best to you and your family, and stay safe, because we need you around. Thank you again so much. It was an honor having you this morning.
Thank you so much. And you're awesome yourself.
Thank you so very much. God.
From the lovely personality.
Oh, God. I'm taking it today. I'm boosting up the ego today. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful one. So, guys, there we go again. What an awesome conversation. This one, we have this. That's ours. You see what I'm saying? You see, this belongs to us, you know. This wealth of experience and knowledge and passion belongs to us, you know. I always say, you see, passion, you can have wealth and knowledge and all them things, eh? But you see, the passion is the driving force for me. It's the passion for me. And this woman is very passionate. And with that kind of passion, I think we need, she could be better utilized. That's my opinion. That's how I feel. Thank you so much to every single one of you who trended with us this morning. Quite a number of you jumped on our Facebook feed this morning. We do apologize for the interface. Normally, we would have had a little picture on the other side there, but we were having some technical issues this morning, but that we could not have stopped us from having the conversation. So again, thank you to Jewel. Thank you to all of you who viewed. Thank you to the Bank of St. Lucia. Thank you to Roy and our directors and the people behind She Speaks Tamara Gibson and Roy Ron. So thank you guys so much again. Until next Tuesday, when we'll be back here again with another amazing story, another amazing inspiration. That's where we wrap it up. A word from the Bank of St. Lucia.